Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to the Charlotte Line. This is Dr. John. It's great to be here on a Tuesday night with our buddies to talk about racing. Got a lot of exciting things going on. I've got a piece of news that I brought to the table a couple of days ago that I think a lot of people had not heard. So first of all, I want to introduce. Let's do Zach Beechler first. How are you doing tonight, Zach?
I get here too. I am okay.
Well, we're glad you are. Glad to have you here. Brady Van Sickle, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. We're starting to approach the 50s and 60s up here in Iowa. So, you know, I get to go outside and break some of that cabin fever. So I can't complain at all.
Well, that's great. We're glad to have you here. I want to start out with my little piece of news because being from Myrtle Beach, I found out that the Myrtle Beach Speedway, that action-packed historical raceway, has been sold and is going to be turned into a housing development.
Stupid.
So,
you're kidding
so
me.
So sad. No, sir. It has already been done. NASCAR Experience sold it to a real estate developer in Charlotte, and that's the end of that. There will be no season this year. That's why when I went out there, about a week and a half ago, and I was walking around trying to find Mike or Roger or any of those guys, and they weren't around. It was just – the doors were all open, the gates were open, and I just wandered around for 20, 30 minutes trying to find people, but nobody was there. So, yes, the Myrtle Beach Speedway is history. So that's my news from the Sun Fun Capital of the world. Yeah, well, that means our next closest track is Darlington down here in Myrtle Beach. So that's okay. We don't even have one in Charleston. There, in the Charleston area, there used to be a speedway in Somerville. But it is no more, and there's just nothing around, really, until you get Florence and Darlington. So, you know.
Now, one thing to say, the late model program or the late model point series that Myrtle Beach will be did do will now be going to Florence. So all those teams and drivers and such that race at Myrtle Beach will now be able to run at Florence. So at least there is some good side to this.
Well, it was a shame because I was going to invite those guys to the Horry County Comic-Con. I put on Comic-Cons and festivals. I've got a Comic-Con on May the 9th here in Myrtle Beach area, and it was basically almost right across from the Myrtle Beach Speedway. So I was going to have some of those guys in their cars, and we were going to have a blast, but I guess that was not meant to be. So what do you guys have for us this week in racing?
I don't know if anything. Oh wait, we raced at Auto Club Speedway, 2 mile, big track, 5 wide, 6 wide. Sometimes, heck, we even had a first time winner. Wait, am I wrong? Yes, first time.
No, first time winner. The second one this season for the Xfinity Series. So why don't start there?
Well, how about before we jump in, we need to do the Fantasy League points update because we are week 3 into the first season, and there's been some jostling. We'll do this real quick. So the picks were Todd had Joey Logano, Garrett had Kyle Busch, both Brady and John had the Chase Elliott, and I had the hometown favorite, Jimmy Johnson. Todd with Joey Logano. Joey finished 12th. He got 28 points. Todd is at 102 points. Garrett with the 18. Kyle Busch finishing second, getting 39 points. He is up to 91 points. Dr. John, an impressive four. John and Brady both getting 36 points each, with Chase Elliott finishing fourth. John, however, has still got a pretty decent gap to catch up. He's at 80 points. Brady has 95 points. And me with Jimmy Johnson, who finished 7th, I got 33 points, and now I'm at 84 points. So Todd in first place with 102, next is Brady with 95, then Garrett with 91, me with 84, and Dr. John with 80. Only 22 points separate all of us, and it's still only week 3.
Honestly, you were a little skeptic after that first week, but man, we are really, really close there at the top.
It's looking at this, and again, need to reiterate, we only get to use these drivers one time unless the driver wins the race overall. So the only person right now that has that cushion is Todd. None of us have picked any of the lower tier drivers or some of the smaller teams. The closest one was actually Garrett and John, who both picked Matt DiBenedetto at the opening of the season. But still, you know, we are 3 weeks into the third to the 20 race week per season, since we are doing two seasons. And I can't wait. But let's hop into it. Auto Club Speedway, one of the I'd say one of the more hectic tracks when it comes to how big it is, the pavement style, and where it's at, located in California. Sunny, sunny, and rainy California all of a sudden. The Xfinity Series was jam-packed with a lot of great racing action. First-time winner on a Leap Day as well. It's not a first-time for a Leap Day race, but the last person who won on the Leap Day in the Xfinity Series, well, was the uncle of the race winner, Ward Burton. Or was it Jeff Burton? Which Burton is it?
No, it was Ward. It was Ward Burton.
It was Ward, okay. Wow, there's a first. It was a really action-packed, great race. It was something that everyone was watching because there was a lot. I mean, there was a lot going on for something that I didn't think it was going to be that good of a race. But it was kind of slow the first two stages, and that's kind of been happening at Auto Club quite frequently. But then stage three happened, and it was just a chain of cautions that just kept coming out. But it still was great racing action.
Oh, no, the racing action was phenomenal. I don't know what it is about that the package of the Xfinity cars runs in particular, but they just get around Auto Club Speedway so well, and that was perfectly on display Saturday afternoon. We saw a bunch of good two-wide racing, a lot of three-wide racing, and those restarts were just insane with drivers being able to fan out four, maybe sometimes five wide because that track is just so spacious. And, you know, before we really go into a whole lot, I gotta, you know, give my sympathies to poor Mama Burton. Between watching her husband Jeff for all those years and now her son Harrison, I'm really surprised that she still has hair on the top of her head from not pulling it out. I feel for her though, because that is a stressful position to be in, being at the track, you know, knowing that you're someone of significance, a very, very close dear loved one out there is risking their life and, you know, driving at such dangerous high speeds, and you just want them to do well. And just seeing her on top of the pit boxes for all of Jeff's wins when I was growing up, and now seeing her there supporting her son Harrison and just riding each and every lap with them. And my favorite quote about Mama Burton actually I think comes from someone on Kyle Busch's team when he drove in the Truck Series for them, where they were joking that they had to put extra support braces on the top of the pit box because of how much she just, you know, bashes her foot down trying to stomp on the imaginary brake for her son. And I feel that, though. So she's going to be logging a lot of miles this year. So I'm feeling for her this year, and I hope that she has a lot more wins like this to celebrate. But getting back to Harrison, what a win. He was under so much scrutiny last year, not winning in Kyle Busch equipment in the Truck Series, which is kind of unheard of.
He's
one of the few drivers to have that on his resume, which is not something you really want. But, you know, and he was always shown a lot of prowess in the Xfinity Series in the few races he ran last year for Gibbs. And, you know, some drivers, they just adapt really well to certain vehicles, and that their driving talents lend themselves to how certain cars drive over others. And while you may not find success in one series, you may be super successful in the other. Like, I think of Jimmy Johnson. He's had one of the most legendary Cup Series careers of all time, but his Xfinity Series stats, they're horrendous. Like, he only has one win, and it wasn't even in Hendrick equipment. So, like, certain drivers, they just really, you know, gravitate towards certain styles of racing. So after all that he went through last year, it was really rewarding to see Harrison Burton pull in, get that victory, and just get that monkey off his back.
Well, and it is his third time. You know, this is the third race for Harrison Burton in the full time, I should say. He's now, you know, this is his main focus, is running for the championship for Xfinity. But the starts he did have in the Xfinity Series, which dates back to I mean, his first starts were in 2019, his first one ever was at Bristol Motor Speedway with a 10th place finish, Iowa with a 4th place finish. By the way, this is his first time ever being at Auto Club Speedway, and he goes out and gets a win. There's another driver that did that who is in the Cup Series right now. We will come back to him. But Harrison Burton did have, you know, he had decent finishes, a best of fourth in his first year, you know, running the partial schedule. His worst finish of 38 at Dover, you know, more than likely a wreck happened. But still, he had four top tens, one top five, and then he comes out the gate the first three races of the year, a second, a fifth, and a first. And to go on top of that, for the entire race, stage one, Harrison Burton finished third. Stage two, he finished third again, so, you know, consistency there, and then came out on top with the race win. Another, you know, Gibbs Toyota's was fantastic, getting the pole. Brandon Jones getting his third or fourth pole of his career in the Xfinity Series, had a really strong showing, winning the first stage, and as well as finishing pretty up there for the second, winning both stages, actually, I take that back. And then just misfortune happened. But you look at the top 10 for both stages, I might add, there's one name on there that has now been a contender in the past three races. And I think you know who I'm talking about, right, Brady?
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. A certain small-time team driver, if I'm not mistaken.
Ryan Sieg, not only finishing top 10 in both stages, having really a career day for Auto Club Speedway, not overall, finishing fourth. And he's had these really great finishes the first three races of the year. Again, he was really strong in the beginning of the year. Hopefully he can keep that going. But that is just fantastic for him, finishing third at Vegas, finishing fourth here. You know, at Daytona, you can have, you know, very small teams get in the top 10 and have a great run. Then they go to the next race, which last year was Atlanta, and they're, you know, back to where they were, you know, 20th, you know, maybe 19th, 18th. But the consistency is there for him right now. Even Matt Snyder, who drove his 93 car, got to the 11th position overall. And you look at the top 10, you have Harrison Burton, Riley Herbst, who, you know, fantastic run for him, Austin Cindric, Ryan Z, Justin Haley, Anthony Alfredo, the man who's making his first start ever at Auto Club Speedway, ever in a Richard Childress Racing Xfinity car, goes out and finishes sixth. A fantastic run for him. And he doesn't even have a full season under himself in both the Truck Series, K&N Series, ARCA Series, so that's fantastic to see for him. Daniel Hemric finishing seventh. Ross Chastain in the number 10 finishing eighth. Jeremy Clements, another small-town driver, right up the road up in Spartanburg, finishing ninth. Josh Williams in the 92 finishing 10th, a career day for that team as well. Like I said, Matt Cindric finishing 11th in the 93. Justin Allgaier in the 7 finishing 12th. Alex LeBay, who is a Canadian driver coming down to do some racing for Josh Williams Racing, finishing in the 90 car 13th. Brett Moffitt in the 02, who will be back in it again this weekend at Phoenix, finishing 14th. Vinny Miller with a career day at Auto Club in the 78, finishing 15th. Austin Hill, who had a fairly good run going for him, had a late finish in 16th. Michael Annette finishing 17th, who, again, really late, you know, race incident happened. Tommy Joe Martin finishing 18th, and we need to talk about him and the adventure he had this weekend. Chase Briscoe finishing 19th. Chad Fincham in the 13th, finishing 20th. David Starr in the 6th, finishing 21st. Ray Black Jr. in the 07, finishing 22nd. Robbie Lins in his final start as of right now in the 15, finishing 23rd. BJ McLeod finishing 24th in the 0 car. JJ Yaley making his, what might be his last start in the 52 for the year, finishing 25th. Noah Gregson for really just a tough break. Some good action, good racing action, though, finishing 26th. Matt Millis finishing 27th. Jesse Little at his first time out there at Auto Club, finishing 28th. Josh Balicki finishing 29th. Brendan Jones finishing 30th. Just had a bad accident, got caught up in some other guy's wreck, and happens quite a bit. Joe Graff Jr. finishing 31st. Bailey Curley, I'm sorry, finishing 32nd in the 47. Brandon Brown, who had a fantastic run going for him, again, caught up in somebody else's issue and then had motor problems to kill him for the day. Kyle Weatherman finishing 34th in the 74. Stephen Lynch finishing in the 66, finishing 35th. And Landon Castle in the 89 car finishing 36th. So, if you look at the top 10, it's a lot more diverse than we normally see it. It's a lot of, well, a lot of rookies. We have one, two, three, four, just three rookies, but all of them making, you know, their first starts for the most, or all of them making their first starts there, along with small teams. If you look at it, you have three very small teams finishing in the top 10. It's so weird to see this now because we're so used to seeing, oh, Joe Gibbs, Junior Motorsports, and RCR dominating. And now it's like, what's happened? What happened?
Well, it's kind of easy to really to point to. A few years ago, NASCAR really made a push to try and give the Xfinity Series some breathing room to really elevate it to a platform where it could really stand on its own separate from the Cup Series. And that was when they really imposed the driver limits, you know, limiting the amount of races that a full-time Cup Series driver can compete in the lower two divisions. And that's really helped open the space for these smaller teams to kind of shine, to really elevate their platform, saying, hey, we can still compete with this equipment with our drivers, and that's brought more sponsorship dollars to them. Going back to you talking about Ryan Sieg, a lot of people are super surprised by the early success for that team, but honestly, I'm not. If you look back at his 2019 season, the signs were there that Ryan Sieg was just on the brink of a breakout season, and the only thing separating him from his stats so far that he's racked up in 2020 and the success he experienced in 2019 was money. Towards the end of 2019, CMR Roofing and Construction stepped up in a big way and said, hey, we're going to partner with you for the entire season. Myatt Snyder brought in Superior Essex. PsyOps came on board for the first race. Just numerous sponsorship dollars are finding their way to Ryan Sieg Racing, and they're finally able to buy the resources to get to let that team show that, hey, we were just at a resource disadvantage. We can still build just as fast cars as any guys out there. And now that they're getting that extra help, they can finally showcase the talent that was there all along. And that's what's been a huge win for NASCAR these last few years. It was a gamble trying to limit the amount of Cup Series stars because the easy arguing point was having Cup stars was an easy billing point. You could easily bill, you know, race ticket seats. You could easily bill sponsors to fill a Cup car, the side of a car. And, you know, so people were skeptical about limiting that. But it's paid off in such a huge way that now that the Cup Series drivers aren't stealing all the spotlight, stealing all the headlines, some other teams can rise to the occasion and steal some of that glory for themselves. And it's paying off in a huge way that now the Xfinity Series is slowly but surely getting that unique identity, being able to stand on its own and, you know, raise up its own stars. I mean, a lot of it's still going to be the driver development that we've known and loved, and a lot of these guys are going to be circled through as they're working their way up to Cup. But we're starting to see a lot of drivers, you know, kind of settle their roots and become the face of the Xfinity Series, kind of in a way that harkens back to days like Jack Ingram back in the early 80s. So just a huge, huge win for NASCAR and the sport as a whole, but really great to see for such amazing teams like Jeremy Clements Racing, Ryan Sieg Racing, which are family-run operations. They do their own thing. And the fact that they're bringing it to the big teams shows that NASCAR really is slowly but surely finding a way back to its roots. And I couldn't be happier for the outcome.
I agree with you on that. And just to put this in perspective, you know, Ryan Sieg has been racing since 2013, made a start with Jeremy Clements Racing for two races when Clements was not able to race in Phoenix and Las Vegas, and then bringing his own team up, racing in the 39th for two more races. If you look at his seasons from 2018 to 2014, he had just about not even 10 top 10 finishes, maybe 10 or 11. If you look at the last three seasons, 2018, 2019, and including 2020, which all three starts he's had are all top 10 finishes, he's already crossed that threshold of 10 races in the top 10. And along with, you know, getting some career best finishes at these tracks, at Daytona, he's tied, you know, it's not his career best, but at Vegas, getting a third place finish, in California, getting his career best finish of fourth. It is great to see this because I, as an avid fan that loves racing, that loves watching these Xfinity guys and the truck guys being able to bring their own equipment up and to race it really hard and to show, hey, I'm not just someone that has money. I actually got skill and talent. And another guy to look at that in the top 10 is Anthony Alfredo. Now I want pasta all of a sudden. He is a guy that had run a bunch of trucks and Xfinity stuff for DGR Crosby last year. Didn't really have a, I don't want to say a whole bunch of success, but didn't really get, you know, the hype or such. His first race for Xfinity being in the 6 or in the 21, he had a 6th place finish, really good. He only missed about 7 or 8 races for the Truck Series last year, getting a career best finish of 8th, and then ran one season in K&N for MDM Motorsports, finishing 5th, and in ARCA getting 2 starts for MDM as well. Gateway 7th in Kansas, 15th in 2018. But for him to come out to Auto Club, which is a huge track, 2 miles, very, very, very bumpy, very, you know, grindy, the tire wear at that place is incredible. For him to come out and get, you know, to be in the front pack, to really be a threat at some points, it felt like. You know, if you look early on, you know, he finished 14th in Stage 1. Stage 2, he improved on, he stayed 14th. But for him to come up and finish 6th in his debut at Auto Club in a car he's never ran before, in a series he's never ran before, it's incredible to me that what he was able to do. I honestly wrote him off as someone, he's just some kid that, you know, had some money behind him and he just wants to race. And then this kind of took that, I had to retake that statement away. I'm just like, all right, he can actually race. He took something that I didn't think he would have a great car, and he got me to change my mind, in all honesty.
Oh, and what a great story, too. I saw a little bit of the pre-race coverage on him, you know, talking about some of the hype, you know, just his humble roots, where he came from. And it was just really nice to see that he had a lot of appreciation for the history of the sport, the position that he was in, and for the team that he's racing for. And it was just a really good story all around to see that he kept his nose clean, kept the car clean, and brought home a really strong finish. So hopefully this is the start of great things out of that young talent. And that's what we like to see. That's why we tune into these lower support series, to see who might be the potential, you know, superstars that carry the sport onward into the future. And, you know, kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of the race, it was a relatively clean race, like you said, for the first couple stages. Stage 1 and Stage 2, both caution-free. But then afterward, things kind of went for a downward spiral. 6 cautions in the final stage. It all kicked off on lap 83 when the number 11 car went for a spin in turn 4 after a flat tire. We went back green flag racing on lap 85, but it was short-lived when the caution flag flew on lap 87 for a three-car incident involving the number 02 of Brett Moffitt, the 08 of Joe Graff Jr., the 1 of Michael Annette, four-car incident, and the 68 of Brandon Brown, that coming off of turn 2. We restarted on lap 90, green flag flying shortly thereafter on lap 93 when the number 5 of Matt Mills went for his slide off of turn 2, taking the restart on lap 96, and then another quick turnaround on lap 98 for a 2-car incident where the number 9 and the number 10, Ross Chastain and Noah Gregson, tangling, ended up punting Noah out of the way, sending him for a spin, restarting on lap 101. And then we went for, you know, a few laps, 9 laps, before the yellow flag flew once again on lap 110 for debris off of turn 4. That set up the final dash to our next caution flag on lap 127 when the number 98 went for a spin. That would be the final caution flag, and we would restart on lap 131 and go green the last 19 laps, allowing Harrison Burton take the victory. After overall, Brandon Jones led 73 laps. He was your dominant driver for the day. Harrison Burton second with 40 laps led on the day. Chase Briscoe, 16 laps led on the day. Daniel Hemric, 10 laps. Ross Chastain, 4. Justin Haley and Justin Allgaier finished, were out front for 3 laps total. And Michael Annette led 1 lap. So, fairly competitive race. We had the 8 cautions for 36 laps and 8 different leaders. And I don't know, it was just a really excitement-filled last stage. And then we got plenty of good racing and, you know, just a straight-on domination by that youngster, you know, crossing the finish line for his first win.
Well, and I will say this. I mean, there's some other stories that came from this was – one big one to me is someone that's worked with this driver, Tommy Joe Martins. He's running his own Xfinity team this year in the 44 car. Didn't make Daytona. Had a engine expire at Vegas during the race. During first practice, his engine let go so hard that actually there was a fire underneath the hood. And they don't have much resources out there at the West Coast Wing. We talked about it, you know, last week, how a lot of these teams are staying out there, if not all of them, really. And he doesn't have really the backup car stuff ready. So he had to take that car that he had blown the motor, had the fire, take it, put a new motor in, and ran it, and still finished in the top 20. And in all reality, I believe that car could have been a top 15, if not a top 12 car. And if you look at the end of the race, like the photo that he had posted on Facebook or someone had posted, you could see where the body had been charred a little bit from the fire. It's nuts to me. It's just crazy to see that a guy who's had, you know, bad luck for the first three races, but at that third race, he's still able to come out and get a really good finish for a team only on their third start.
Honestly, NASCAR truly is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, and you really, really have to marvel at the human perseverance to just, you know, face down adversity like the team faced down during those practice sessions, and just to pick themselves up and carry the team on their shoulders to continue to overachieve and continue to impress with the limited budget and resources that they have. So, like you said, just really glad to see it, and I'm glad that they have that platform to where they can really show what they can do.
Now, a couple drivers that I mentioned running down the finishing order, Brandon Brown, who honestly was having a fantastic run for, you know, for that race. Even last year, he was talked about during the race, saying, "Hey, you know, he's actually doing really good for what he has. He's not the huge guy, kind of like he's not like Ryan Sieg, where Ryan does have a couple. He runs two to three cars. This is a one car operation, family owned operation, just like Sieg's. But he still did pretty decent in the both first stages. In stage one, finishing 16th, not the best, but he was running up there in the top 10 for quite a bit of it. And then in the second stage, finishing again 16th, but still running up there, and then just got caught up, tangled up in somebody else's mess. Then his engine expired, which was unfortunate. And then Brendan Jones is another one. That's a big one, really, because he got the pole, won both stages, looked like it was going to be good, and then just bad luck happened, got a little beat and bang, and ended up having to ended up four laps down at the end of the race, still finished 30th. But just a couple bad notions for that team, I should say.
And like you said, just a really good team, and you hate to see that they don't have the result to really show what kind of race they were running. I got a chance to meet them last year at the Speedway, and just a really great family. Just love racing to their core, and they're the kind of people you want in your sport. They bring a lot of energy, they bring a lot of excitement, and they bring a lot of passion. And you can see it in just the effort that they are able to bring to the track week in and week out to take what limited resources they have and really hit the track running. Unfortunately, they don't get the result this past weekend that really shows how well that team was running. You said they were running solidly in the top 15, top 20 all day, maybe even still a top 10. They were running strong in both stages, but unfortunately, that's just the way the racing wheel turns. And sometimes you're, you know, in the right lane, sometimes you're going to be in the wall. So unfortunate deal. And they're not the only team that had a pretty unfortunate night. That we also saw Noah Gregson, who kind of got into a bit of a tanglement. He had all the drama last week at Vegas with getting into Myatt Snider and almost blatantly kind of turning him. And so he had to deal with the pressure of that all week.
He did it.
It was pretty blatant. And then
he did admit it to Michael Waltrip, actually.
it kind of was the deal, and then just running into the issue, it looked like more of a racing deal Saturday, but then he ended up on the bad end of the deal. But that's just that's just racing. You're gonna have those rough weeks, and you're gonna have the great weeks. So if you want to be a champion and you want to make it in the sport, a young driver like Noah, he's definitely going through the ringer, and he's gonna be learning quickly. Hopefully the lessons that'll be able to propel him to a long, fulfilling Cup career down the road. But yeah, definitely not the weekend that youngster wanted, but I don't know. I think we've pretty much exhausted all the recap on the Xfinity Series. If you want to move on to the Cup Series.
One thing I want to mention, two things we need to mention real quick. J.J. Yaley will not be in the 52 in Phoenix. Actually, it will be a kid named Ruby Kush. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. He will be racing. It sounds right now as if for the rest of the season for Jimmy Means 52. But I want to talk about Matt Millis's crash or incident. I shouldn't say crash, because that gave me a reminder of Kyle Larson's wreck, hard wreck, a couple years back at the exact track. I was really scared for Matt and the BJ McLeod Motorsports guys, because the way that car was heading towards the wall, I thought, oh no, they're going to have a destroyed race car. And the fact that Matt was able to, under pressure, under lack of braking, able to come around and bring that thing to not a stop, but pretty close to, before tapping the wall and bringing it in. I was like, I don't know how he did that, but I'm so glad they do not have a torn up race car.
Oh yeah, no. Auto Club Speedway is notorious for that backstretch, just absolutely eviscerating cars. And like you, I was just expecting another horrific crash down that backstretch. But no, he was able to get it locked down, get the wheels kind of stopped, and he just was able to really scrub off a lot of speed and just really hunker down the brakes and was able to get by with some very minimal damage to that number five. And it could have been a lot worse, because we've seen a lot worse.
No,
so really, really good effort by that young driver to limit the damage and minimize what was already going to be a bad afternoon.
But yeah, that was one I wanted to talk about, because I keep thinking back to Kyle Larson's huge hit there at Auto Club just a couple of years ago, and I was just like, "Oof, I do not want to see that again." But yes, so Xfinity, fantastic racing, a first time winner. Not just that, winning on the anniversary of his uncle on the leap year in Xfinity. Kind of weird, kind of like I'm an idiot, but I actually just finished watching, probably about 15-20 minutes before we started the show, the Auto Club race for the Cup Series. It is on YouTube now. I rewatched the entire thing, and it wasn't boring per se. There wasn't a lot of cautions, only the two stage-ending cautions, and then Clint Bowyer's tire going down. But there was still a lot of action-packed racing, a lot of passing, a lot of hard racing, a lot of beating and banging at Auto Club Speedway, this track which you could legitimately run on the apron or against the wall, and we still had people banging against each other. Notably early on in the race was Kyle Larson kind of gotten thrown around by one Daytona 500 or three-time Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. It was quite the race, to say the least, with little to no cautions.
I was honestly surprised we didn't have more cautions. I really thought the race was setting itself up to be a pretty tight, kind of a wreck fest kind of a day, especially on those restarts. I was really surprised that those got away as clean as we did. But no, it's a very, very clean afternoon. But I don't think clean necessarily means boring. We had a lot of good side-by-side racing action at times. The leaders would get out, ahead of each other, and we really didn't see a true breakaway at the front until the very latter stages of Stage 3, because for the most part, Stage 1 and Stage 2, the top four or five drivers were able to stay relatively close. I would say within like 2 or 3 seconds, and then on that last stage, it kind of came down to just two drivers, and then eventually Alex Bowman would pull away to a pretty dominating, convincing win at Auto Club. So
Bowman the showman.
Oh, he put on one heck of a show for his second career victory in the Cup Series. And honestly, who does not love seeing Bowman win a race? Because that is a true rags-to-riches story in the modern Cup Series scene. He paid his dues. He worked for the start and parks. He worked for the low-budget teams. And he caught his good break when he needed it. He showcased what he could do at the right time, and it's panned out handsomely for him. He's in a contract year, so that's added pressure for that number 88 team for him to perform. And just what a way, especially a week after what could have been a win last week at Las Vegas, if that last caution had not come out and we had not finished the race with the green-white checker, he could have been looking at back-to-back victories. So an extremely impressive start for that number 88 Chevrolet.
Well, running down the list again, Alex Bowman winning in the 88, a fantastic run for him. He was dominant all day and, you know, winning not just stage one, but coming second in stage two and winning the race overall. We also had Kyle Busch finishing second, Kurt Busch, his brother, finishing third, Chase Elliott finishing fourth, Brad Keselowski finishing fifth, Denny Hamlin, that Daytona 500 winner, finishing sixth, Jimmy Johnson, and his last start at his home track of Auto Club Speedway, finishing seventh, Eric Almirola finishing 10th, Kevin Harvick finishing 9th, Eric Jones, and a fantastic finish for him, finishing 10th. Tyler Reddick, the highest finishing rookie, finishing 11th. Joey Logano finishing 12th. Matt DiBenedetto, who had a fantastic beginning, kind of struggled a little bit, but still had some great runs, finishing 13th. Martin Truex Jr., who was mad during that race, finishing 14th. William Byron finishing 15th. Christopher Buescher finishing 16th. Ross Chastain finishing 17th, a little better than the week previous. Cole Custer, another rookie, finishing 18th. Ryan Blaney finishing 19th, who he was second for a very long time, but had to come down for tires with two laps to go. Unfortunate there. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. finishing 20th. Kyle Larson finishing 21st. Michael McDowell finishing 22nd. Clint Bowyer finishing 23rd. Austin Dillon finishing 24th. John Hunter Nemechek finishing 25th. Ty Dillon finishing 26th. Bubba Wallace finishing 27th. Daniel Suarez finishing 28th. Corey LaJoie finishing 29th. Ryan Preece finishing 30th. J.J. Yaley finishing 31st. Brendan Poole, Brady's favorite, finishing 32nd. Joey Gase, another Iowa favorite, finishing 33rd. Garrett Smithley finishing 34th. Quaff Hoffman finishing 35th. Reed Sorensen finishing 36th. Timmy Hill finishing 37th. And the only car to not finish at all, finishing 80 laps with the engine expired, Christopher Bell finishing 38th. And I just feel bad for Bell. He's had three bad races back to back to back. And this one wasn't even his fault. Engine let go. I feel bad for him. But if this is where the worst is going to be, maybe this is a good sign for him.
Hey, I
honestly
got a quick question.
Honestly, get the bad look out of the way early. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were talking about William Byron, and I think wasn't it last Monday he was doing that test run of that new car?
Yes, we will talk about that because he did a two-day test of that yesterday and today, and had a scary incident today as well. We will talk about that after the race because that is one thing we need to talk about, as well as a change that NASCAR had announced and is now starting to reconsider after the fan reaction.
I was just checking in on him.
He's still there. He finished that test today, but overall, this was some really good racing action. And by the way, earlier I said that there was a driver who went to California and got a win. In his rookie year, getting his first time ever at California. Well, that was Eric Jones doing that in a dominating fashion in the Xfinity Series, and you know, finishing 10th for him, that's really a pretty good finish for him considering the luck he's had the past season or two.
Oh yeah, no, we definitely like to see that, especially with him being one of the joining his other two Gibbs teammates in the top 10, because he gets under a lot of scrutiny, not rising to the level of talent that Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, and Truex are currently competing at. But to his credit, he's not been in the Cup Series that long or in NASCAR competition that long. So he's still learning. He's still adapting, still refining his talents. And I feel like given the time to properly blossom, he'll be right there with the Kyle Busches, the Kevin Harvicks, the Martin Truexes of the world, winning multiple races a year. It just got it. Got to let him, you know, come into his own a little bit. But, you know, looking down this racing order, I really got to talk about, you know, rough luck Ryan over here. Ryan Blaney has had the most up and down start to the season. Second place at Daytona, but being involved in the Ryan Newman wreck. Dominating the Vegas race, having a late race caution, and, you know, getting caught up in a late race restart wreck, ruining what could have been a potential win in Vegas. Running really good at Auto Club, in contention for the win, running second. His tire completely shreds at Cords. He's relegated to a 19th place. Just, he can't catch a break, it seems like, these last few weeks, as he's trying so hard to, you know, find the momentum. But at the same time, he's racking up stage points left and right. And I think last I checked, he's still the point leader. I'll have to pull that PDF up
yes,
here.
Yes, he is. he is the point leader, and some people will say, well, he doesn't have a win. Just because you have the win guarantees you into the playoffs. It does not say anything about the actual points championship for this first 26 race of the year. There's a regular season champion and an actual champion, kind of like in the Truck Series and Xfinity Series. But, yes, he's still the point leader, and that's a great point of yours. You know, that is something. You know, he had the great and scary finish at Daytona, coming oh so close to, you know, getting a Daytona 500 win under his belt, having an amazing run at Vegas, still rebounded a little bit, not as good as he could have, and then, you know, having this fantastic run in that number 12 body armor car, which was a tribute to Kobe Bryant and his daughter. You know, it really did show that he has the talent, and it's just sometimes lady luck. And I said at Vegas, lady luck was on his side somewhat. He didn't finish, you know, terribly at Vegas, but lady luck was definitely not his side at Auto Club Speedway. You know, still racking up those stage points. That's a great point, though. You got to get those stage points sometimes. And for him getting those, you know, getting what he got, 9 stage points in the first stage and 10 plus a bonus point in the second stage. That to me, you know, even though he didn't, he wasn't going to win the race. I don't think he could have caught Bowman because of how well Bowman was running, but he definitely could have, you know, kept off Kyle Busch and Kurt Busch at the end. I do feel bad, but I think this is a good showing, not just from him, but shows what he is going to be capable for the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. And like we talked about last week, this is also really important for the Team Penske organization to keep an eye on after they had that big, you know, crew chief swap up where they swapped all of their driver crew chief pairings over there. And it was a pretty up and down day for the captain. While Ryan Blaney saw a lot of the race from the front and unfortunately had the bad finish, Brad Keselowski, kind of towards the middle, had a very solid, quiet day, ran the top 10 for most of the event and came home with a nice, solid fifth-place finish. And then Joey Logano, he showed early signs of strength, you know, running in the top 10 at the end of the first stage, but he kind of fell off there in the second and third stages and it really was kind of a non-factor. But we've kind of seen that with Joey, you know, kind of up and down at Auto Club. He does have the win in the banks as he's still, you know, trying to get used to his new pairing with crew chief Paul Wolf. But definitely we're going to be keeping an eye on the Team Penske saga to see how those crew chief pairings keep going forward. So far, it looks like a slam run. Home run? I know my
home run.
Ball.
Slam. It's called a slam dunk home run. Okay.
Field goal.
Oh, yeah. We're going to go score hockey baskets. Okay.
Yeah. I do agree with you on the Penske side, but they've had pretty good runs, you know. Besides looking at Blaney's, you know, past two issues, he's had great runs. Just one bad pit call, which at the championship race can cause you a championship. But you know, it's good. It's good that this change, that he's still working with his crew chief and his team and working hard with that. But, you know, in all honesty, Brad didn't even have a car. And he said this, I don't really feel like I had a car that would win. So we did the strategy to try to get the most points. And he did, finishing fifth at Auto Club, where the captain, Roger Penske himself, built that track. Well, maybe not by his own hands, but he did build it. It showed what kind of strategy you can have in NASCAR. Okay, I know my car can't win. It's like a top 15, top, you know, a top 20 car. I'm going to play a strategy card. And, you know, even though he has top tier equipment, that is a great finish for him, for him even acknowledging, yeah, this car ain't going to win a race, so let's try something. You know, it's something, too, to look at. We talked last week how the Toyotas weren't performing well. Now, obviously, yes, it was early. It's still early in the season. But if you look at it, Toyota in second with Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin finishing sixth, Eric Jones finishing 10th, and the worst Toyota from Joe Gibbs, at least, Martin Truex, who had some very colorful words during the race itself. But I feel like I think Toyota might actually have something good going for them. They just had a crappy day at Vegas.
And they had a couple drivers that had to overcome a lot of adversity. We saw that Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. had speed early on, but both of them had to come from the back a couple times throughout the event. That really hindered their progress as they tried to move forward. And then Martin Truex Jr., he had one of his crew members have a really severe cramp on a pit stop that completely slowed down the momentum of the 19 and really put them back in the pack. So just not a good day overall. They were able to really come back and rally, though, in the later stages. Like you said, being able to place three of their cars in the top 10. A huge turnaround from last week when they were shut out of the top 10, but you know, still not quite what we're used to seeing out of the Toyota camp as a whole on the, you know, these bigger tracks, the 1.5 miles and the 2 miles here at Michigan and California respectively. But we'll be definitely keeping an eye on it. But on the flip side of that, how about them Chevrolets? For the second week in a row,
yeah,
we saw the Bowtie Brigade really looking strong. And so you've got to hand it to that whole entire camp. Going back in the offseason, taking a look at the Camaro, seeing that it wasn't quite working, but not completely scrapping it, you know, just kind of massaging it, tweaking it a few areas. And so far, the indication early on is that they've hit on something, because their cars were extremely fast all Sunday long. Alex Bowman out front for 110 of the 200 laps, so over half the race was with his Chevrolet. Other Chevrolet drivers out front included Jimmy Johnson for 10 laps, Ricky Stenhouse for 6. William Byron also got a lap led, so a very huge portion of the race was led by Chevrolets, and we saw their teams throughout the top 10 throughout the race, including the hometown favorite Jimmy Johnson having another stellar run, hopefully indicating that he might be riding that ship to hopefully have a very successful last full-time season in the Cup Series. But Hendrick as a whole was also looking really stout, with Chase Elliott also sneaking into the top 5. So a couple races in, you know, we don't want to get too comfortable with this, but it does indeed appear like, at least for the moment, that the bow ties are back.
It is a strong indication on, you know, Chevy reworking, not you know, like you said, scrapping, but really just reworking that Camaro body, because that really, the thing that really killed me was when they announced, hey, we're going to have, you know, a new body, we're getting rid of the SS, we're going to go with the Camaro. I'm like, all right, that's cool, that's badass, it's going to look sharp, blah, blah, blah. But then they didn't really do much testing of it during the season. There was no manufacturing testing, there was no nothing, and there was very little wind tunnel action with the Cup guys, or the Cup season. The first time that you ever saw the Camaro on the track was Chase Elliott doing a test in Vegas, like right after the season ended, when they were getting rid of, or when they were coming to it. I do love that they actually went in like, okay, we need to fix this. How are we going to do this? And they got it. I mean, you know, can I say they got it right? It's still too early. We're only 3 races in. The Super Speedway, it showed really strong. Vegas, 1.5 miles, it showed really strong. The 2 mile track of Auto Club, which we only run, you know, Auto Club in Michigan as 2 mile tracks that are, you know, heavily banked like that, ran really good as it shows. I am looking forward to the short track, because one, they will be running this modified body, but two, they will be running the low air for a different aero package for Phoenix, and the other one I'll be wanting to see them run is Pocono, to see how run there. If it can run really well at all those tracks, I feel like this could be the year that Chevy comes back and wins the championship. Will it be with Jimmy Johnson? Will it be with RCR? No one knows right now, but I feel confident in saying if they can perform really well at those 3 tracks, you know, short track and the road courses, you know, I feel like it could definitely be a threat for a championship this year.
And honestly, NASCAR's got to be really, you know, really in a good position, really happy with how the first 3 races of the season has panned out from a manufacturer standpoint. Since the early beginning, the thing that NASCAR has always strove for, but probably the biggest thing that they've tried, you know, to get into the sport is parity, where all the manufacturers have as equal chance as they can at winning each given Sunday. And so far, this has got to be the most parity we've seen to start a season. We've seen a Toyota take Daytona, a Ford take Vegas, and now a Chevy take Auto Club. And the top 10 at Auto Club is very evenly split. You got the 4 Chevrolets and then 3 Toyotas and 3 Fords respectively. So I know this is a constant battle, a constant struggle between wanting to let the manufacturers have their own identity, letting the manufacturers have more input, and maybe experiment a little bit, but also trying to keep the competition as level and as fair and as even as humanly possible. It's a tightrope, and it's not always walked to the best, especially by NASCAR, but so far the early indications are that we're finally getting to a place where we're as close as humanly possible to getting these manufacturers on as equal playing field as we can going in week to week for these races. And I don't know, that's got to create a lot of excitement and got to make a lot of executives somewhere very, very happy.
It means they're going to buy my Chevrolet Camaro, that's for sure. So one thing I want to say is if you are on Facebook is to go to Stuart Haas Racing. They actually put up, they have a rig that can show like the surface of a track, like how bumpy it is. And they posted a video today of how bad, like they did a simulation of Auto Club, and holy moly, if you look at that, it just shows how bad the track is. You watch the, watch the race, like, oh, it's a little bumpy. But when you see the car sitting still, no camera movement, no nothing, it shows how bad it is. And you look at all these drivers that were able to power through the beat and the banging. You know, the suspension doesn't have no comfort to it. The seat has no comfort to it. In all reality, the only comfort they have is maybe they'll wreck out and not have to worry about this. That track is so crazy when it comes to the bumps. And in all honesty, it's one of the bumpiest tracks we go to. And it also has this really rough surface that eats up tires. A track compared to is kind of like Atlanta, which we'll see in a couple weeks. That racing action, seeing all the cars bump, wobble, jump around, seeing the cars go four or five wide, you know, not just at the restarts, but during the race itself, and also seeing a little bit of tension between a couple competitors, Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin.
I just completely spaced off what you just said. I do apologize.
Replay it now for him.
I don't think that means, you know, replay it. I think that means we need to transition.
Well, what I was trying to get to is, you know, looking at the racing surface, looking at how the cars reacted, and looking how hard people were racing, I got to say one thing. I'm surprised, A, we didn't get as many cautions, and B, there wasn't a lot of people riding. And I mean, like, you know, car actually touching the wall a lot. The only time I seen someone actually up against that wall was Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin, when Denny kind of punted Kyle into the wall. And even then, it was just for a few moments, and he was still able to get, you know, a respectable finish. That track is nuts, and I really want to go to it just to see how bad that, just to walk around to see how crazy bumpy it is, because it kind of reminds me of Iowa a little bit, you know, me and Brady's home track, where it's got a lot of character. It doesn't have the abrasion just yet, but it has like those bumps and those little wobble areas. Like I was just so astonished with this race.
Oh yeah, no. Anytime you go to a wore out race surface, you're really going to be putting the true skill of the driver to the ultimate test, because there is no grip on a track that as old and as worn out as Auto Club Speedway. You mentioned Atlanta that we're going to in a couple weeks. It's the same way, but drivers love that. It puts more of the control back into their hands. It really lets them feel like that they're more in control, that it really separates, you know, them from the rest of the field, because it's more on their shoulders to really wrestle that car around, you know, fight between the seams of the different grooves of the track, and really just, you know, for lack of a better term, manhandle that beast around the corner.
Yeah, that I do love that track, and just I do hate that we only go to Auto Club once a year, but I can see why, with how I don't think people's spines would be able to last at two trips to that track.
Oh goodness, gosh, no!
And to think that they're gonna go back, you know, they're gonna have a kind of a break going to Phoenix this weekend, you know, kind of a slim, short track, and then going back to Atlanta where it's like, rah, bah, 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 just beating and banging that splitter on the ground. Holy cow. Speaking of, well, before we go into talking about Phoenix, Dr. John brought it up earlier. William Byron had a two-day test of the next-gen car. Did it Monday and today. Today was the last time. Scary moment. He spun the car out during one of the sessions. Did not wreck it. Did not have any damage. initially people were saying he destroyed the car, but it was clarified online later that no, he just in fact spun the car out. And it makes me really happy to see them testing that car right after. And William, as far as right now, of March 3rd at 10:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, he has not said anything about the test. He has not mentioned how the new car compares to the old, the current car, I guess. I'm excited though to hear his feedback from it, because just by the only there's not many videos of the car racing or on the track. The only video that I have seen so far is the car starting up, and that sucker sounds mean with exhaust coming out of both sides, just like cars, I don't know, like what, 20, 25 years ago, Brady?
Oh, something like that. But I actually do have some quotes of his from the test if you'd like me to read them.
Ooh! Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so they're even categorized. We first got his impression of the car. Williams quotes, "I was really curious to see what would be different on this car. Our current car has kind of been maxed out in terms of what we can do with it. It's going to take some time to learn this car, so we have to be patient and see how things go. We're just trying to learn as much as we can right now during this test." And when asked about adjusting to the new car, he said, quote, "It was just tough to get a hold of at first, just how fast everything is. The tire doesn't have the same sidewall, so there's not the same amount of slip that you can hang the car out with. You just have to get used to that timing and the rhythm of the car when it does step out, how quickly you can catch it, when it slides the front tire, how quick does it come back in line. All those things are a lot different than what we do now, and it takes some adjustments to learn that." When asked what he really likes most about the car, quote, "The sequential shifting was really cool. I've done that before when I first started racing, but haven't had it in any of my cars since. I think it will be better for us on restarts to focus on moves and not have to worry so much about shifting. And on road courses, you're going to be able to be a lot more aggressive in your downshifts, and that's going to be a lot more fun." And honestly, that last part of his quote about the road courses, if NASCAR is looking at adding more street courses, more road courses to the series, gear shift kind of a setup on the car will really be beneficial to teams going forward in the long haul.
It is something I do love to see, is NASCAR kind of coming up with bringing modern technology to this car, because a lot of people say it's not like the cars you get. Bah, 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 bah. You're right, it's not. But when you look back to, you know, when NASCAR started to get a little away from the street version, now they are back to the street version, kind of with the bodies kind of looking like, you know, the Mustang, the Camry, the Camaro. But I do like that they are going this route of adding this new. They still aren't having ABS braking or traction control of any of that. So I'm not saying they're taking stuff away. I think adding this gearbox, the sequential gearbox, is interesting, especially to a lot of these guys who've never used it in racing. A handful of drivers have that have run like the Rolex 24 or have done some sports car racing. I do like this car. I do think it's not just a, I don't know what the body type is, if it's just a regular, just a body they threw on it, but the sound that it makes with the dual exhaust and the sound going down the straight and the shifting, because Eric Jones got to test it at Homestead, and there's a video that popped up online of him shifting it from inside the car, and it sounded so, I don't want to say great, it sounded really cool, but I'm not too sure how to feel about it. I will be interested to see, though, how that gearbox will work at super speedways, because, you know, you're not shifting gears that many times. You're only doing it when you are, you know, going to pit or if there's a caution. Other than that, the one place I would love to see this car tested at with this gearbox is a short track like Martinsville, because if it has more than four gears, like the clip that Eric Jones had that came online, I would be interested to see, are they going to have downshifting at Martinsville, the shortest track we run at, because you only go like 60 to 120 and back to 60 in like 12 seconds, if that.
Exactly. No, I think it's definitely going to change how the teams approach the new car, maybe how the drivers approach how they have to attack the corners. And, you know, kind of building off what you were alluding to there a little bit, they have some quotes from Chad Knaus that kind of talk about how he feels like the NASCAR as a whole is finally catching up to where the sport should be from a standpoint as far as the technology that you're seeing in your production vehicle being similar to the technology being input into these race cars. He's quoted as saying, "I like the car. I think it's really cool. It's definitely taking a step in the right direction in terms of modern motorsports, so I think that's great. We have a lot to learn as an industry about what this car is capable of. It's significantly different. You can liken it to the difference between working on a modern-day streetcar and working on a streetcar from the 70s or 80s. There's just a major difference in the type of stuff you can work on. The components are way smaller and more nimble, and it's a lot more compact in the packaging of the car. What and when we can change things is going to be significantly different. What you would change with the track might change from what we're going to do now, and you're just going to have to, you know, adapt and really work on that as the season, you know, expands and kind of unfolds next year." And these are just really good points that Jack Nuss brings up that you really have to kind of keep, you know, take a closer look at, as these teams are going to have to completely throw out everything they've used to, including something on this next-gen car that has been officially announced yesterday. The wheel configuration, they're going not only from the 18-inch rim to the from the 15-inch rim to an 18-inch rim, they're also moving away from the 5-lug nut system to 1-lug bolt. And I don't know why, but a lot of fans are, for lack of a better term, bitching and moaning online, completely complaining, crying about, "Oh, we don't get our 5-lug nuts." I don't care. I'm going to say this once and only once. I am so goddamn sick of lug nut penalties. I'm so sick of, driver is going to be penalized for not having all lug nuts tied, or, oh, he didn't get all the lug nuts tied, he's got to come back down pit road. I'm sick of it. You either have the one bolt, you either get it on or you don't. Plain and simple. Every major form of motorsports outside of America uses the one bolt system. And to me, it's just utterly ridiculous that NASCAR is so far behind on this. It's more safe. If you ask any of the modern motorsports, that's why they do it. It's a way safer system. And you don't have these unnecessary penalties. I don't understand why people are so bent in the shorts. I get wanting to hold on to history and tradition to a point, but when it's standing in the way of progress and making the sport better, I don't get it. Plus, I know a lot of fans were concerned that maybe it would change the choreography of the pit stops. That argument I do give credence to, and I do understand. However, this will not change the choreography of a NASCAR pit stop. You're still going to have teams, you know, going to the right side of the car once the car's in the box, then going to the left side, and then dropping the jack. You're not going to see them like an F1 or an Indy car where they're already in the box, ready to go, you know, air jacks, ready in the hand at the ready. It's still going to be your same NASCAR pit stop, except for you're not going to have to, you know, hit 5 lugs. It's just going to be the one bolt. It's already going to be locked securely in the air gun, so you don't have to worry about it falling off. And if they don't get it tight, you don't have to worry about no penalties, because if they don't get it tight the first time, you're going to know, because that wheel ain't going to stay on the darn car. So I personally applaud the move. Think Kyle Busch at Atlanta or Kyle Petty at Pocono.
Kyle Busch at Dover.
Exactly. The list goes on and on. I personally am here for this. I get it. Production vehicles don't have a one-bolt system. Boo-hoo. We got to have some sort of checks and balances. And plus, I don't understand how you can hate how that wheel looks. The rim looks phenomenal. It looks like any sort of rim you'd see on any modern production vehicle, a very standard five-poke styling. And I don't know, those lower profiles with the Goodyear lettering just absolutely pop. So for every one of you out there complaining, you aren't getting any sympathy from me, because I personally think it's a great move, and that's going to look phenomenal on the racetrack next year. And plus, you're not going to see the – you don't even see the lug nuts when the cars are at speed anyway, so why do you even – I don't know. I was really fired up from it.
And that was Brady's ranting hour. Coming up next. No, I'm kind of on the fence about it. I do like the progression of it. I do think it's a slick little system. But it's someone that, you know, has enjoyed, you know, that has worked on, has done, you know, lug nut stops and, you know, has been on active pit roads and done lug nuts and all that. I'm kind of torn. There's a lot of people who say, you know, it's going to put people out of work, blah, blah, blah. It's not. You're still going to have a bunch of people working. I do like the tradition of it, though. I do like to hear that, the burp, burp, burp. I do like to hear that. I do love the thing about it being traditional. And in fact, you know what? For All-Star Weekend, you can't use air guns. You got to go old-fashioned, jack up the car and use, the old-fashioned wrenches. You can't use air guns. You can't even use power tools. It's just pure muscle. How about that one? How about we do that for the All-Star race? Damn it.
Too loud. Bruton Smith will hear you.
Good. Bring it. You know what? Bruton, bring me on. I will make some changes to the All-Star race, and it'll be fantastic. You know what? You can throw the jack over the roof. All I think back is to when Michael Waltrip's team threw the jack over the roof of the car to jack it up on the other side. All right, let's bring that crap back. But going back to what I was saying, I'm on the fence about it. I do love that they're trying to change it. Now, there has been some backlash of it. Like you did say, NASCAR is now not reconsidering, but talking about maybe changing it up somehow. Not too sure how you can go from 5 to 1 unless we go to 3 somehow. One key thing is that a lot of people don't know is that, Tony Stewart was a big advocate against the lack of the lug nuts. There was a point in time in racing where teams would only tighten up for lug nuts, and Tony Stewart made some valid points, which is scary because Tony Stewart's usually the guy that says, like, you know what? No, we should have had more wrecks. We should have ran a figure eight race, blah, blah, blah. But, you know,
every time he said that, that was sarcasm.
Dude,
just to clarify, that quote was pure Tony sarcasm. Pure sarcasm.
But I do love, you know, I'm someone that I do love the new design of the wheel. I'm unsure how to feel about the tire itself because it is low profile. If how it's going to do with racing, because you know we haven't seen how the tire wear it is on the new car and these new tires. But I'm someone that, you know, I enjoy it either way. I'm not going to be mad if they go to the single lug. I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be mad if they stay to the 5 lug. I'm someone that enjoys both of them, you know, watching IndyCar and F1, Le Mans, all that have them. There's the only series that right now I can think of that uses a 5 lug pit stop is one of the touring cars that runs with the Rolex series, like that happened at the 24 Hours of Daytona. Some of those sub-series still uses the 5 lugs, but it will be interesting to see. It will be interesting to know how the drivers think of it too, especially the ones that get to test this car, because we've had 4 different drivers test it, if I'm wrong.
Yep.
Eric Jones.
4 different, yep.
4. Cool. Look at that. I could do math today. But that's one thing that we haven't heard them talk about much. Those drivers that tested the car, they talked about the car. The car feels like this, but they didn't say how the tires were, the tire wear, or how it felt, you know, on that different size. Because the tire itself is much, it's much small. When I say smaller, I don't mean the tire is actually smaller, but the amount of rubber you see is a lot less than what we're used to. So that's the only thing that really makes me nervous is seeing how are these tires going to be better or are they going to be worse than what we have? Or are we going to have like a disaster we had at the Indianapolis Brickyard 400 a few years ago with tires only lasting like 12 or 13 laps?
You know, hopefully it doesn't come to that. But actually, there is a quote from William Byron about the tires. It was after his incident where he spun off a turn two. He said, quote, "We were probably 6 or 7 laps into a 25-lap tire run. I had been a little free for a couple of corners, but nothing major. That time I just got loose and figured I'd be able to save it, but just wasn't able to. It just came all the way around. And I had a number of similar moments in the race Sunday and was able to drive out of it, but just wasn't able to do that here. And that's what caught me off guard the most. It's part of testing, though, learning where the line is with the car and what we can do." So there he was kind of like working really kind of focusing in on the tire run specifically. But what you're kind of getting at and what you're, you know, speaking to about the surface of the tire being smaller, it's really the sidewall of the tire with that lower profile, you don't have as much tire, you know, between, you know, the surface of it and the rim. It's a very, very narrow sidewall there, but that's going to be hugely beneficial for a tire company like Goodyear. Modern vehicles moving towards a lower profile tire, this is going to really help Goodyear, in their tire development and really find ways for them to make real world application processes to the production tire that they're rolling out to consumers like you and me. And so from that standpoint, this move was a no-brainer all along, because there's not a whole lot of cars out there on the market using 15-inch rims with those fat sidewalls that you see on a NASCAR. And so for Goodyear, this is the move that you want. The quote that I just read was not the quote I was looking for. He had one where he was talking about, William was talking specifically about the sidewall and how when you with the current car, you know, you've got the extra sidewall, and because you've got more sidewall to the tire has more flex and more give, and so you can really sling the car out and really get the car kind of hung out. But since you don't have that sidewall, you don't have that as much give in the tires, and you can't, you know, really hang it out there and really throw it out there because the tires don't have the give. Because when you do that with these lower profile tires, instead of having a little bit of flex and a little bit of give, the tires are just going to slide, and you're going to be able to, you know, you're going to be at lack of control and almost basically spinning out every lap. And so that's just going to be something with the learning curve these drivers are going to have to face and just try and adapt to throughout the course of 2021, which is the scheduled full rollout for the NASCAR next gen car.
Ooh, one thing I thought of, maybe they're going to go back to Daytona to do an open test again. Ooh.
Ooh, there we go. Some other
like
big some news before we get to our, you know, our Phoenix preview and kind of break down some of that, you know, all of our previews and whatnot. We didn't have any Truck Series action this last weekend, but we have some Truck Series news to talk about, specifically in regards to the bounty. Every week, it seems like, GMS Racing has announced that they're going to go after that bounty. They're going to put Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott into vehicles, respectively. It looks like Kyle Larson is going to drive the car at Homestead, and Chase Elliott going to drive the car. I'm looking for the race here. They had it somewhere.
Atlanta.
Chase Elliott going to run in Atlanta. And then two former team owners going to come out of retirement to partner together to field a truck for Eric Jones, Billy Ballou,
dude,
and James Finch.
Like, what?
Yeah, they're teaming up to put Eric Jones in the car at Homestead. It looks like Halmar Friesen Racing, that fields the number 52 Chevrolet, they're putting up their own bounty for a Truck Series regular to beat Kyle Busch during these races. That's the same $50,000 bonus promised to the Cup Series regular by Kevin Harvick. And so this what started as kind of a friendly wager between Cup Series drivers has really kind of exploded into its own kind of narrative, its kind of own storyline.
Dude, I love this because of the fact of how bold Kyle is. You know, Kyle is not someone to hold back. It doesn't matter if he got second or first in a race, he'll tell you his mind, which I love. But it is cool that every week there's something new that comes out of this. There's something that's just like, oh yeah, hey Eric, you want to race? All right, me Hinchflip, and hey, we're gonna get you a truck. All right, it's just like, what? Two guys who have not been in the sport for a long time are coming back like, yeah, we want part of this action. They don't even have a truck. It's like, where is this coming from? What's gonna happen? I truly am excited to see this. I want to. So as of right now, we only have one at Atlanta, which would be Chase Elliott. As of right now, we have two slated for Homestead of both Eric Jones and Kyle Larson. There is no other set beyond that as of right
now. Actually, Chase Elliott will be at Kansas.
At Kansas, well. Okay. So it's just I can't wait because and Brady knows this. You know, I'm a huge Truck Series fan. I have, you know, that was the first series I ever got to work in at Gateway when Bubba Wallace won that race. It's one of my favorite races to go to. You know, I try to go to the Martinsville race as much as I can for the Truck Series. I can't wait for this. I think one thing that really puts it out there is the fact that there is this, you know, and it's not just It's not just the 52 truck putting up a bounty. It's not just Kevin Harvick. It's also the CEO of, you know, Gander Outdoors putting up this bounty too. He's like, yeah, I'll match it. I'll put 50 grand on the table. Sure, why not? It's like, what? Like, you don't see, you know, the commissioner of a football or basketball saying like, yeah, if any of y'all beat, you know, the top tier team, we'll give you 50 grand. We don't see that. We see the CEO of the company who's sponsored like, hey, here's 50 grand. If anyone could beat Kyle, I'll double it. You know, it's just like, what is going on? I cannot wait for those race weekends. The only driver that the driver I feel really confident in right now that could really give a run, Kyle a run for his money, is going to be Kyle Larson at Homestead. Because Kyle has ran really well at Homestead in the Xfinity Series, and I think he's done a truck start there. I feel really confident, though, that Kyle Larson will be able to give Kyle Busch a run for his money.
And, you know, love him or hate him, this is why Kyle Busch is good for the sport of NASCAR. He's got such a dynamic personality that can polarize people like no other and really stir up a storyline. Kyle Busch is just so unfairly, you know, unparalleledly talented. It's just unfair the amount of talent that he possesses behind the wheel of a race car. And he's just so brash and cocky about it that he really knows how to rile up a fan base. And that's what's so good about him being a part of our sport. We need a driver like Kyle Busch to get the fans excited, to get them engaged. We don't need a whole bunch of white knights running out there. That's boring. We need the driver that's not afraid to be the villain to really, you know, get the fans riled up. And he does so much good work off the track that it kind of, to me, offsets the balance, and I can really separate the Kyle on the racing track and the Kyle away from it. Because you honestly, people have talked about it time and time again with our sport that I'm surprised that no one's that it's still kind of an issue that people just assume he's an asshole. There's two different sides of him. There's the competitor, and then there's just the normal everyday Kyle Busch. And that's what you need if you're going to be successful, I think, in any sport. Whether the medium, but I don't know. That's what I love about what Kyle brings to the table. He's talented, he's brash, he's cocky, and he sure knows how to stir up a storyline no matter what he does. And honestly, what a compliment too, and what a flex to be like, hey, you're too damn good. Here's money to get people motivated to beat you because we're tired of seeing you stink up our show. Just like, well, sorry, I just wake up in the morning and I piss excellence. I don't know what to say.
I am rushing right there. So speaking of Kyle, he will actually be doing a doubleheader this weekend. He will be running the 54 Twix Candies and Cream car, which actually, I looked at the car. I seen it. I love it. I want to buy one of those cars because it looks so cool. He will be doing double duty as well as I believe Brad Keselowski will be doing double duty running the Xfinity Series. The entry list is officially out, and it is quite a humdinger, if I may say, for the Xfinity Series because there are so – I don't want to say so many what's the best word for it? Predictable people, I guess. Anyone? No one? Anyone got anything for me on that one?
Well, I'm not in there, so I mean.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of Cup Series drivers in this one, and of all the tracks to pick, this one makes a lot of sense. This is going to be the first year that Phoenix International Raceway will be the championship deciding race for the Cup Series drivers. So, if they were going to use any one of their five starts on an Xfinity race, this would definitely be at the top of the list for a lot of those drivers. Any extra track time that they can get around Phoenix is just going to be that much more crucial if they find themselves as one of the championship four come November. And so looking at the entry list, Brad Keselowski is on there. He's going to be driving the number 12 for Team Penske and Kyle Busch. And now it's funny you mentioned his sponsor there, Zach, because when I was a tiny tot, you know, approximately around the age of 11 or 12, and I was sketching out my fantasy NASCAR, you know, if I had talent and was going to make it into the sport of NASCAR one day, I always wanted to have the most beautiful looking Twix car, and I just drew Twix car after Twix car. And so the fact that my favorite candy is finally going to be on the quarter panel of a race car, I am stoked.
Oh, it's not the quarter panel, it's the whole car. It is the quarter panels, the hood, the roof, the tail. I do love it. The color combination is really good looking. It's going to be an interesting car to see on the track, and it's a car you won't be able to miss fairly easily. Other notables that are going to be running that race, Brett Moffitt in the R Motorsports, he's back in that one. Unsure when R Motorsports is going to have a different driver in there, because Brett has not committed full-time to them. Noah Gregson's still going to be racing, and I will be interested to see how he's going to run at Phoenix, and if him and Matt Snyder are going to have another issue, because Matt will be back in the 21 car, I'm sorry. Let's see here. A new one, Colby Howard, who's a late model driver here in the Carolinas, who actually does pretty well. He will be making his first start with JD Motorsports in the number 15. Riley Herbst still going to be in the 18. The 89 is speculated. It is not on the entry list to run. He sounds like he does have a sponsor, which would be Landon Castle. Let's see here. Josh Williams, who came off 10th, will be racing. Jeff Green in the 93 will be attempting to run the race this weekend. That will be interesting. There's an interesting one. Timmy Hill will be in the 61 this weekend, who Austin Hill ran the 61 this weekend. So I am excited to see what's going to happen. There's a lot of this, the 52 Jimmy Means Racing has, it says Cody Vandeleer. I can't read.
I'm Vandeleer actually looks about right with that, with this one though.
Hey, I can read. That's going to be the Xfinity lineup. It is as normal, pretty much regular sets get or regular teams. Like I said, the 15, the 02, the 02 still the same, Brett Moffitt. But the 15, the 54 making its first start of the year. The 52 are going to have different drivers along with Jeff Green. I can't wait to see Jeff back into it. The 89 is on there. I take that back. So in the Cup Series, though, not really much different. All the regulars, as well as Reed Sorensen, still in the 77. The 6 car still has Ross Chastain. Still no update on Newman when he's coming back, but we are glad to see Newman is still out and about, still being Newman, going hunting, going fishing, spending time with his girls, and even still going to the race shop. So with 10 minutes left, predictions for this weekend in the Cup Series, it's going to be tough for the pick to pick someone.
Oh no, I think the pick's going to be really tough all across the board. But I feel like we should start with the Xfinity Series. Arguably, You can't bet against Kyle Busch, especially at the Xfinity Series level at Phoenix. He just has such an unparalleled record at that track alone, let alone in the series. And so, arguably, he's the hands-on favorite coming into this weekend, but you can't rule out his fellow Cup competitor in Brad Keselowski, though, honestly, you can't really discount the Xfinity Series regulars. Drivers like Justin Allgaier, who won there this last fall, drivers like Chase Briscoe, who's on a bit of a hot streak, Austin Cindric, there's plenty of names out there that'll be looking to not be overlooked by the star power that is Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. And so, I don't know, my gut is telling me that Kyle Busch is going to win the race Saturday, but I really feel like you can't discount a driver like Justin Allgaier. So it'll be interesting to see who rises to the occasion, or if any of the drivers can rise to the occasion and take down Kyle Busch on Saturday. But what are your thoughts on that?
You're always right. Anytime you have Kyle Busch in one of the other series, he's definitely a force to be reckoned with. The only time he isn't is if a motor lets go or he has a very costly mistake on pit road, a.k.a. Atlanta a couple years when the tire didn't get put on all the way. Another driver I would look at is Ryan Sieg to have a fantastic performance with the hot streak he has going for him. Also one to put on there, I would say, is Landon Castle in the 89 for Morgan Shepherd. So as of right now, it's sounding like he will have enough sponsorship money for tires and a pit crew, like for the full race. As of right now, I'm not too sure how credible that is, but last year at the fall race, he did have a sponsor, ran the majority of the race. And then at the end of the year, or at the last race at Homestead, he had a sponsor and finished in the 15th. I think that's going to be an underdog to look at that could have if he saves a set of tires that Kyle Busch can or, you know, the front pack doesn't save a set, I feel like that might be an underdog that could have a really killer performance.
Oh, definitely could have a really killer performance. And honestly, if you're looking for a solid, especially if you're a fantasy player out there, he's a good pick, because anytime Landon Castle gets behind the wheel of a car, he gets the most out of the equipment, but always brings it home in one piece. He's definitely, he's the perfect young driver to build an up-and-coming team around. He's going to take care of your equipment. He's going to really give you good feedback, and he's going to get the most out of the equipment. And we've seen him build up programs such as BK Racing. He was instrumental in JD Motorsports there for a time. With Starcom Racing, he's really helped that program along as they've continued on to their first few years of Cup Series action. So over a short period of time, he's quickly gone from being an unknown rookie development driver for Junior Motorsports to being a seasoned veteran that can be counted on to really elevate a underfunded program. So glad to see them in the race this weekend. And I mean, what about Morgan Shepherd? Can you not love? He's just the perfect NASCAR story, a driver out there, just out there living his best life, driving cars, which is his only love. He's had a ton of success in various forms of motorsports, especially in NASCAR in the late 80s, early 90s. He's in tremendous shape, goes out there roller disco in, just a great personality. So how can you not love Morgan Shepherd?
Still one of my favorite clips is him at one of the tracks and he's rollerblading down pit lane and has a little fall. So that takes care of Xfinity. We have 5 minutes left. We must talk about the Cup Series, and this one is a little more all over the board because we have drivers like Kyle Busch, who's had success there. We've had Kevin Harvick, who's had success there. And we've had Alex Bowman, who's come so close to having success there, that honestly, those three drivers right there, if it's green, white, checkered finish, I feel like if those three are 1, 2, and 3 right next to each other, two of them are going into the wall and Kyle Busch wins the race.
Honestly, You stole the words right out of my mouth. If I was going to have to look at any three drivers as being the favorites, those are the three drivers that instantly come to mind. You just can't talk about Phoenix with not bringing up Kevin Harvick. The man is just absolutely unparalleled when it comes to success in the Cup Series at the Phoenix International Raceway. So definitely, if you're going to have a fancy roster, you have to have that number four car on your team. Kyle Busch, same way. He's just so, so good there, and he just always seems to get around there, whether it be the old configuration or the new. He just always seems to have a way around there. And then Alex Bowman, his very first start for the 88 team and Hendrick Motorsports back in 2016, he dominated the event and almost snuck away with his first series win. And with the momentum on his side, with the great run he had at Vegas, the great run he had at Daytona, and the win last week, you really can't discount him this weekend at Phoenix. So I feel like you'll definitely have to keep the 88 team on your fantasy roster. Some other drivers to keep an eye on. Jimmy Johnson, he's been good at Phoenix in the past, and he's so far had some mojo on his side. Be interesting to see if he can take that into the sunny side of Phoenix and maybe capture one more win in the desert. The number 48 team looking really good so far. So not a bad pick there. Other Toyota teams such as Martin Truex Jr., he's looking for a bit of a bounce back after a rough couple weeks, so maybe keep an eye on him. Other drivers in the Ford camp, I mean, not really much news from the Penske side of things. They surprisingly don't really run that well here. I'm trying to think back in the last few races. I mean, I know I've seen Logano and Keselowski fight for the occasional top 10 or top 5, but surprisingly the Penske guys just don't seem to get around that track near as well.
It is a complicated track. It is a tricky track. It is a fun track no matter what series is running there, as long as the power stays on. And DC Solar is not a sponsor anymore, so we can really hope that it will. All I can think of is that truck series race right before the championship, lights going out at night. I feel that
guys, we got 90 seconds left, so we'll
that's
wrap
what I was just about to say. I feel it was a great show. Here in Studio G, Dr. Oh, God, there's a woman talking to me. I feel that we had a great show. I feel we've talked a lot, and I cannot wait. Also, just a quick note, the ARCA Series will be running out there, so we will talk about that next week as well, and talk about the prep for Atlanta and talk about this bounty on Kyle Busch again. Guys, good show.
We'll see you guys later next week on the Charlotte Line. Be good. Well, actually, don't be good. Just be right.
Wait, we're doing a show next week?
I don't know.
I have to.
Who's us? Does the FCC listen to this?
No. Well, I'm the executive producer, so we're doing a show, okay?
Well, what am I then? Joey co-host?
Something.
Oh, well, all right.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Go in the bed.
Bye.